Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and tonight's Paradigm Shifter is special. Well, I know they all are, but this is our first Paradigm Shifter playing with us again, and we're really glad. Welcome to the show, Randy Masters of UniversalSong.com. Randy is an aficionado of bringing together color, sound, shape, vibration for resonant living, and we haven't talked for a while, but I noticed, Randy, that we started talking on the air in 2007, and you just continually change and grow and add new comprehensions of the universe and of ascension. Welcome to the show, and fill us in on what's really going on these days.
Yeah, thank you, Veronica. Yeah, I'm growing because I'm living the harmonic life, you know.
I know, but I guess
I call myself an artist in resonance. That's my term for myself, and that lets me do anything that I'm doing. It all fits that harmonic lifestyle of living in harmony with the divine blueprints of creation as much as possible.
So that's
while
got
still being
hey,
a human
Randy, that's
and
gotta
still
be
living in these interesting times that we wonder if, you know, people have put out a curse in the past or something, you know.
I thought the shift was going to be a little different than it was. I thought we were going to be like Tinkerbell, ding, nice chime, and then everything would be absolutely amazing. But I don't think it's going to be that fast.
Well, it might be smoother, but there are some people who never learn to drive with a clutch.
Well, that's true. That's true.
You know, so they're struggling a little bit with, you know, that part of it. And multitasking with a cell phone in one hand and a big gulp in the other, you kind of wonder how they are driving. You know? That's my metaphor for you look out there. It looks a little unusual at times.
Actually, it's very unusual. I'm sort of quelling that rising tide in me wants to speak politically, but I think we won't get into that at least at the beginning of this.
But healthy skepticism is good.
And I was just going through your website, which is wonderful for anybody who would really like to kind of break into this subject with nicely categorized aspects of how you work with Universal Song. It's called UniversalSong.com.
.net.
Oh, .net. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can explain why that is.
Okay, but the thing is, these days with the computers, all you have to do is put Universal Song in without even worrying about net or com, and up you come, right?
Yeah, all those little dot things.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been learning a lot about the puja. You know how people do puja to bring in a connection between nature and air, all the elements and so on. And I was reading your site going, well, it is like you're bringing together. Well, I'll let you explain it to everyone, but you're really bringing together vibrations from every aspect of life, aren't you?
Yeah, I look around the unified field and different areas of science and for harmonic clues, and then I study those, and sometimes I'll do the math on it and convert it from light into sound or sound into light or something into something else, and then the dots begin to connect, and then I talk about those things. And,
well, how does that work for you? Are you an intuitive? Are you channeling this, or is this a perception you have?
I'm oriented that way, and the channels open, and sometimes they are opened, and because of that, I may see things in a different way. I can channel. I do channel, but, you know, what does that mean? To open up your receptivity, I call it vertically, to the higher aspects that we're connected to in different realms is like what a lot of the prophets and famous writers and things have done. Is those channels were open, and they may have read the Akashic records. They may have, and this is, you know, back in the days, of course, now we have CDs instead of records, so the Akashic CDs, you know, and MP3s, you know what I mean. But they may read those things. They might just all of a sudden be in a space of the isness where they just see it and they just get it. I get downloads that I don't even know how I got it, and all of a sudden I just know something. Huh. And it was frustrating at certain times of my life because I couldn't prove, well, where I got it. Somebody would say, well, how'd you get that? Like, did you channel? Did you read it? Did you do this? Or do you see it, you know, in terms of clairvoyant or synesthesia? And that's wonderful when those things happen and you can say, well, you know, I saw this, so I can see this geometric shape like clairvoyantly or something like that, or hear something clairaudiently. But to me, it's like all of a sudden, poof, it just appears.
Hmm.
But I've worked long hours and years on opening up channels to be what I say is basically in touch with an isness where all of this stuff is known. And just because I haven't previously read a book about it or had somebody tell me or whatever, it's still, if it's known in the universe, it can be tapped into. So that's a little bit different than some of the channeling where, you know, I'm going to change my voice and then, you know, start bringing an entity through and, you know, all of that kind of thing.
But you're bringing kind of universal knowledge through, aren't you? Now, you started off being, well, I know you didn't start off that way, but very young, you started off with music, didn't you?
Yeah, in the first couple of years.
Did you perceive music as almost a physical, or did you understand music intuitively at that point, meaning it's like a physical presentation of something?
Yeah, I was a pretty kind of a normal kid, except I grew up for a while in an unusual circumstance where I went to the shows in Las Vegas with my parents and got to see all these famous performers because my uncle had built several of the hotels there in the early days that where all these famous people played. And they'd just take me along because I wasn't a crybaby. I was a kind of a funny, entertaining kid that said funny things. And so adults enjoyed me, and it wasn't like they just left me home with a babysitter. So I got to go out and see these things.
Wow.
You know, and my
That's
first
lucky.
Instrument was a little drum set as a kid. That was kind of interesting because later on, rhythm became a huge part of, in working with international rhythms from all over the world became a specialty that I did. And then I started playing around with the piano in early years, second grade about, and then started formal lessons on the trumpet in the fourth grade, then later added guitar and then bass and percussion and all these things. And as I was progressing through growing up and through school and all of that, you know, at some point, more other dimensional stuff began to open up somewhere around 1966. I started composing music, and so certain channels opened up where it kind of wasn't safe for those channels to be opened up earlier for different reasons. Mm. So they might have been really open for a while when I was a kid, and then various things happened, and those fields shut down to a certain degree, and I felt pretty normal. And then in that later part of the 60s, those channels opened up, and they kept opening up. And I did do, I had a puppet that I used to channel through, and it was kind of very endearing. And I spent a number of years doing that. And in working with that puppet and talking to people in groups and individuals, I learned how to open up other channels. And just by playing all that music and spending all those hours, I mean, it's like wall-to-wall music, writing, performing, rehearsing, arranging, and teaching, you name it. You know, being around that kind of a sound vibratory field, things began to open up. And then in taking spiritual classes and studying with different people and metaphysics and things and going through all the meditations and personal growth work through the, you know, I don't know what you call it, human potential. There's different terms for all of that.
Mm-hmm. Metaphysics sort of thing.
As I would get openings there, I'd bring that back into my music.
Hmm.
So I would say there was sort of, you know, a gradual, and every once in a while I'd have some experience of phenomena that wouldn't repeat itself. I've had complete light body experiences, completely turned into light, and every time I had anything like that, I always had witnesses there that saw it, so I knew I wasn't being delusional.
How does a person turn into light? Is that a kind of an alignment or an interaction between, what, say, resonant portals or something?
Well, I imagine there's a whole bunch of different ways, depending on a person's timing.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time this happened with me, it was like 1980, and I had gone for a run about 15 miles and came back in, and we were teaching classes in our home, spiritual classes, and a friend was there in the class. And when I came in from my run and went into the room where we prepared stuff for the course, we both turned into light right in front of us, each other, just like on Star Trek when you turn into all those golden particles.
Oh, wow.
We completely, simultaneously, both had a complete, total light body experience standing up in a room, looking at each other, and being able to look through each other at the same time. And I have no idea how that happened, because it wasn't just one of us.
How long did it last?
That's a good question. Because I was kind of in a bit of a altered space. I'm not really sure how long that was.
Would it be like minutes
or
days? So
many minutes. It wasn't like we were there for an hour in that space.
Oh.
And I didn't know at that time how to breathe and how to do things to stay in it longer. I didn't know what I could do to, you know, kind of go into cruise control a little bit with it. And each time I've had things like that, it all of a sudden just happened. And I wasn't able to pull in some technique in order to sustain it. So it's possible that those were ascension experiences, but I didn't leave and I didn't reach a permanent state where I can do that when I want.
Well, let's talk about ascension, since you have thrown that word in and we're coming toward the shift, and maybe these were predicating your awareness. You know, maybe, I don't know. I have no idea. It's just that I think we get those big hints of what's to come, and they come in that kind of form, I believe.
Well, another word for it that is, I think, is practical would be a quickening, which should be a way of cellular energy fields in the body and cells in the body, et cetera, mm-hmm. spinning at a higher spin rate. And if you spin high enough, you know, it's possible that you could actually spin right out of this dimension.
So it's like the Merkaba, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Our Merkaba, our personal one, gets activated in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn techniques to activate them, and there's classes in that. And there's different kinds of Merkabas, not just one. And there's different ways to work with those and techniques for, you know, like turning them on, getting in, turning the key, maintaining it, going places, meditating, and all of that type of a thing. But when those fields spin, if they spin the cells in the body and those fields start spinning faster, they vibrate differently, and eventually they can vibrate at a higher level than the density, and then you might see through somebody. You might become transparent.
When Christ resurrected,
he said, "Don't touch me because I'm not in my earthly garment." He was in a light field that they weren't prepared to embrace. And he warned them not to come up and touch that field, because that hadn't solidified from the realms that he was in to the everyday life. And so that was a higher spin rate than the energy fields of the people around him could tolerate. So he warned them to stay back for a while until he grounded that energy. It was like too electrical, you might say, possibly, or and it would have triggered something, and who knows, it could have been very detrimental to them to touch that field. But he had that high, in my sense, that higher spin state. And I've had that happen where I've actually physically levitated, so many inches off the ground. And it was witnessed as well. And there was a lightness that I felt over my body just before it happened. And then all of a sudden I just floated up about 6 inches off the ground when I was laying down on the floor.
How did you feel in your mind? Were you thinking at all? Were you?
No, I mean, I had such a high, loving energy that it was so high I wasn't even sure how I was going to contain myself in the normal physical sense. It had that lightness of being that was so high I could tell that something was going to happen and on that one.
And then you crashed
and
landed?
You know, mm-hmm. and it was just ran so much love through my body that it spun my cells, and I literally lightened up. Well, you know, it didn't last a long time, you know, and I didn't come plunking back down onto the floor. I mean, it gently just rose up off the floor about 6 inches, my whole body, and then it settled back down. So I see that as a function of spins or higher, and that's what I'm talking about with the quickening, is this cellular. And then the metabolism, the cells themselves, and so on, spinning. And maybe there is a type of a dialogue between the physical body and the physical duplicate called the supra, S-U-P-R-A, the supraphysical body, which is a physical, a non-physical duplicate of our physical body. Mm. And there, I believe that there's some kind of a dynamic. Now, at some point, I think adepts can learn how to go into that when they want, spin their field, and travel dimensionally, bilocate, walk through walls. I mean, all this stuff is documented. It sounds far out like science fiction, but there's tons of documentation of these kinds of things happening. Even the Philadelphia experiment, they, a field spun and loosened up because of a type of vortex, which is what happens in tornadoes with these counter-rotating fields. And all of a sudden, in that vortex, time and space goes into a null zone, and all the particles in a building or a room are softened, and you can literally walk through walls. So that's how a chair can go start going through a plate glass window, and it doesn't break the window because the window is now in the same solid form. And then when the field shuts down, like when the tornado moves on, all of a sudden everything gets solid instantly, and here's a chair stuck in a plate glass window in the middle of the window, and the window is not broken.
I've never seen that picture. Is that so?
Yeah. There's lots of documentation of these things, especially in states that have quite a bit of tornado activity. Hmm. I'm surprised that it isn't talked about more, where a lot of people are aware. You know, they hear about straws going through telephone pole, but they just assume that the winds are so high that it blows the straw, and that's not what's happening.
Well, you know why they don't report it, because people aren't why. There's a lot
but
of controls
out there. But what do you
do,
especially all these different states that, you know, where people see this stuff, they live through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now with all the cell phones, you would think Ma and Pa and everybody else could go out there and take pictures of what happens around the tornadoes, and they would see unusual physical realities.
Hmm. Well, yeah, so let's jump back to the word ascension. Isn't there a big link in there?
Well, then that's part of what I feel that it is this quickening, this cellular spin that's occurring by raising frequency and raising consciousness. Therefore, at some point, there would be a dominion over matter where one could take your light body or go into your light body or become your light body or shift from the physical density right into a light body. Now, this is the more romantic, far-out idea of it. Another more mundane level is just you're still here, but your vibration is heightened to the point where even overnight, changes can occur that could be permanent and shifts in your consciousness where your reality has different things going on in it. And things that used to go on it don't anymore because you've accelerated your vibration to the point where you've spun certain densities out of your field and out of your mind, so you no longer magnetize certain types of drama and certain types of problems.
So it's just a sec. When you went into the kitchen and you turned into light, isn't that an extreme, spontaneous example of that same thing?
Yeah, and I didn't know how to sustain it. I don't even know how it happened.
Mm.
You know, boom, it just happened. I wasn't doing any technique. I wasn't doing anything at all. And it was just instantaneous. Myself and the other person, who I'm still friends with, I've known for about 30 years, we both had it happen at the same time. Now, mm-hmm. Did one of us trigger it? And then the other went into sympathetic resonance. Did it take something going on in both of our energy fields that synchronized? I really don't know what happened there. Each time I've had different things occur when I've had these experiences. But obviously, I'm supposed to still be here. I'm enjoying what I'm doing in terms of bringing more heaven to earth as a type of ascension instead of, you know, turning into a light body and zipping out of here and say, well, okay, I'm done with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lightening up and bringing more of that vibratory field into the density here, therefore having the potential of influencing consciousness and matter with the kind of spin field that I have whenever that's going on. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Is it anything like the political spin? I'm just teasing.
Yeah, it's interesting that they use spin, the spin doctors, you know.
Yeah.
But usually that type of spin represents greater and greater forms of lying and deceit, which is
the polar opposite.
A densification rather than lightening up. The truth would lighten things up, but the lies make it denser because then they have to cover the lies. And to me, it's spinning the other way into more and more into forgetfulness and density. Yeah. That type of ascension I spell with two S's.
Let's jump back into the kind of ascension that we're looking forward to these days. It's been tossed around in metaphysics, probably with a little more glibness than it should. But what do you think, Randy Masters, is going on regarding ascension and the shift? What do you think's really happening? Do you think it's just that we're becoming lighter in order to release some of the density? Or do you think some people are going to be just leaving in a state of ascension?
I believe there are people who are just going to blink off at some point and blink into another reality and shift. Mm-hmm. You know, a graceful thing without physical death experiences, without drama and cataclysms or anything like that. They just vibrate and literally walk into another dimension, like supposedly many of the Mayans did. They left some people behind to tend to the temples to take care of the effects of those temples being in the different worlds. As temple caregivers and caretakers and such. But the other ones supposedly just walked into another dimension, like the Anasazi are reported to have done that, you know, in Arizona and New Mexico and wherever all they were. They literally vibrated and walked into another dimension. Hmm. They didn't die. There aren't mass graves. They literally, something quickened that vibration. So that's a type, and done in mass. Where did they go? They didn't die off of plagues and things like that. From what I've been told is they just literally walked into another vibratory world because they either knew how to do it or the circumstances were such that that quickening as a whole group consciousness was available to them. So I think all of these different scenarios are possible. At the same time, by the codes that different people have in them and what their commitment is, what kind of worlds their soul is committed to experiencing. And some people may be complete with a certain type of 3D density, and they're ready for a 4D, 5D, or 6D, or beyond type of an experience. And they may translate into those dimensions without having some big cataclysmic thing where they, quote, unquote, have a physical death experience, that they literally morph into or spin enough and become that light body, but now it's sustained rather than a few minutes like those experiences I've had that lasted maybe minutes. All of a sudden they've reached that as their new standing wave, and the belief systems in the body, the programs, the mind, the energetic fields and the way they communicate with each other, like the causal body, astral body, emotional bodies, all these different bodies are in alignment with sustaining a new resonant frequency that they have now achieved.
It's like they released something that was encoded. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they would have a code in them that at a certain point in their history, according to their higher self and their code and various things, would say that it's okay now, or this is their time to have this next dimensional experience. Where for me, that wasn't the message, was for me to experience it so I could understand something. And then so many minutes later, I'm right back here in the 3D, you know, in a more of a normal way. I did not have an agreement to leave, and I did not have something in place to sustain that field. I just got to taste it and be there for a while, but then slam dunk right back into my life.
But I think those tasting spells are sometimes like an indicator of what's yet to come and kind of giving you a sense of being able to replicate that consciously later.
Yeah, I think so too. I've been wanting to absolutely do that. I've had a number of different kinds of these, and I think now I know what it is. It's in me, but the code would have to match to say now is the time that I can sustain that.
Where do we get the codes,
Randy? It might be a problem now if I'm driving down the street at night in my car and the headlights are on, but the interior lights are not on. Somebody looks over at the car and I'm glowing like a light body. I mean, that could create some problems. you know.
Especially and if there's no camera present.
The trooper pulls you over and, you know, wants to see your license, and you reach in your pocket and your hand goes right through your body. I mean, you could flip them out a little bit, you know. So the agreement would not be to create a greater disturbance in the field, mm-hmm. unless that's you're supposed to do that as a catalyst, and they see you walking down the street glowing with light, and people are not, you know, fainting and passing out because they can't handle it, or trying to make a Christ figure out of you or something, mm-hmm. you know.
Where do we get the codes, Randy? Is this just an accumulation, or from other galactic lives, or where?
I believe that we all have them from the Creator in our creation, and then we have different styles of exploring experiences, and usually we don't give a slip to that and bail out of a life early and just all of a sudden walk into another dimension and stay there without having permission somewhere in our field that is a right experience for us to have. I mean, there may be exceptions, and sure there are, but overall, I believe that there's timing codes, and if it's not somebody's timing code for that to happen, then it doesn't happen. Or if their timing code is to taste it, then they remember what it's like, just like the people who have had these near-death or death experiences, and then they've been brought back, and they're no longer afraid of dying. Mm-hmm. Now they're not afraid of living, and they start, some of them, really living, because they don't have a certain kind of fear always agitating their nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think it could be, now, when you hang out around people like that, some of that experience should rub off, because if you were around if you were around a whole village of people and nobody was afraid of the dying experience,
right?
You might have a different experience in your nervous system where it's not being tweaked. And I think if you're around beings who have ascended, immortal beings, as you know, I've talked to people who have been around these beings and met with them or had appearances or whatever. I think it can change their life, because now you know it's a possibility. Even if you don't know how to do it, you experience something that you can't explain away, and that plants a seed, or it vibrates that seed in us, that code, to start vibrating, and we start becoming, from the inside out, more of that. That's another kind of ascension, which I believe is from the inside out.
Do you think the shift that we hear about so much is about us having more access to ascension, conscious ascension?
Yeah.
Okay.
But also in that shift is to get more of the heaven that we are in our divine blueprint into this lifetime, to where it's not threatening to have the lights, literally the lights turned on in us.
Mm-hmm.
People don't look at people as witches and going to stone them and burn them like they did in other eras, mm-hmm. where it can now be of an advantage to have that kind of attunement, rather than you're a threat to the establishment and, you know, you're concerned for your life because, you know, you're too much online.
Mm-hmm. It's happening, isn't it? It's in growing numbers.
Yeah.
Of people waking up in that way. So let's get back into some of your products are amazing. Like, you've got jewelry, which is combined with sacred geometrics, which are angled in such a way as to amp up the power and the rapport with the universe, right?
Yeah. The angles and angels, I say, it's bringing in information. So if you change the angle of something, you're bending light, and that changes the information. So it's all about information.
Hmm.
And the materials that it's made from, the geometry, the shape, the colors, and how all of the parts talk to each other can have stacks of codes in them. You know, the length and wavelength, that's one. The mm-hmm. angles is another. The color is another. Symbols and such are as shape resonance.
Hmm.
And so what I'm doing is I'm putting these different combinations together that vibrate a particular way, that act as a reminder in our energy field of a higher matrix of thought, a higher way of being, or to remind us of something that's in us that maybe we haven't fully brought out in the world, so that it reaches into us and says hello.
So it actually has, because when you say remind us, I go, doesn't it actually attract the wavelengths and frequencies out there in the universe and so on?
Yeah,
doesn't
it works like a transceiver.
Yes.
It's transmitting but also receiving, and because of a certain kind of fractal or duplication of a cookie cutter type pattern. The cookie cutter pattern as a fractal resonates in such a way to be in harmony with everything else that fits that cookie cutter, regardless of how big or how small.
Hmm.
That's a kind of a practical way of looking at what a fractal is about.
Hmm.
You know, a certain kind of a geometric mathematical duplicable pattern, but the pattern resonates at any scale, no matter how small it is or how large it is. The angles remain the same. The proportions remain the same.
It's a bit holographic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I'm working with that same concept.
So the idea of wearing the jewelry is one thing, but also let's do some sound tools as well, because I'm fascinated about how they all come together, don't they?
Yeah, they're different expressions of the vibratory nature of reality, which is, you know, the laws of vibration. So you get that with angles. You get that with stones and tones. The stones give off frequencies. They're called Larmor, L-A-R-M-O-R, Larmor frequencies. They've been measured in science that all the elements in the periodic table give off a little radio signal down inside the subatomic matrix.
Hmm.
And it's a sound that's down in the heart of the atomic matrix of all the elements. And those sounds have been measured. They actually give off sound.
Wow, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah, so it's more complicated when you take a mixture of elements, because it's going to have a mix of all the different frequencies that make up the chemistry of whatever the mineral is. So,
We feel that. I mean, they might emit a sound, but we also feel it, right?
Yeah, because even if the sound is extremely high, way up in the trillions of hertz, you know, megahertz and gigahertz and that type of thing, beyond the 20,000 plus hertz that humans typically hear. I mean, dolphins go up to like 200,000 hertz up in there of sounds that they deal with. We're still affected by sounds that our physical awareness does not pick up, but our fields pick it up. Microwave frequencies off cell phones and things way up in the gigahertz, that affects our energy field even if we can't physically hear it or duplicate the sound and feed the sound back. So tell me this,
if we use the jewelry, if we use the sound coming to us, can't we offset the sound that's coming from, or the vibrations that are coming from cell phones, for example?
The way I approach that currently is we're not basically blocking what comes out of a cell phone. What we're doing is raising our frequency up so that the impact of whatever is going on with a cell phone does not impact us in the same way. We've altered the way it impacts us and the way we impact the cell phone without actually blocking. And what some of the devices can do is help take some of the chaos out of the field that these devices produce.
Uh-huh.
But we're not blocking them. You can get all kinds of stickers made by companies, a lot of which are intention devices. And that's well and good to a certain point, but they make claims that it's blocking this and that. And basically, from all the tests that I've seen with my science friends who go out and measure these things, they're not blocking anything. I know somebody tried to make a cell phone and put millions of dollars into, put a whole team together to try to make a healthy cell phone and gave up on it.
Hmm.
But we can raise our own frequency. I mean, there's people at Ground Zero in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You've heard stories of them. Some of them were like Zen masters, and nothing happened to them. They had no radiation poisoning. They had no detrimental effect to their fields from being in atomic bomb explosion that happened right around the corner from them.
And that's just the consciousness that they emitted.
Right. That's the model. So the devices are tools, training wheels, and they can be delightful and beautiful and fun and everything else to help us, remind us how to spin up higher, than to rise above the dross of the nonsense.
Hmm.
And that's what type of ascension is to ascend above, to rise above, to rise up above a lower density.
Right.
And then instead of stepping our vibration down, we resonate in such a way that helps other people rise up. In other words, if everybody bees themselves, everybody's going to be themselves. Because you're surrounded by people being themselves, and that's the field. And one of our greatest services to reality is to be the self that the Creator created us to be. That's our gift back to the Creator. Say, thank you. I won't try to be something I'm not. I want to be exactly what I am. And remind me who I am, because I may have forgotten, and I picked up notions of who I should be, and I've shape-shifted and adapted to where I'm forgetting what? What am I? Who am I? And then what you want to be able to do is vibrate that so much you go, duh, I get it. Okay.
Well, that's
now,
harmonizing
why would you
with
want
your own
to be anything
codes.
Else? Go ahead.
That's harmonizing with your own codes. I'm just jumping.
That's
back
what I'm talking about with
okay.
codes.
Okay.
It's not like we're more special with the codes. No, it's just, you know, are we accessing them because we want to and it's our timing to? I mean, there's some people who could care less than they would about this conversation. Codes, what? They think this is crazy. They don't think there's any reality and we're a bunch of New Age airheads talking about this kind of stuff because they're tuning to a different thing.
That's right. And maybe you New know, Age airheads can burst into light a little easier. Who knows?
Yeah, they may. Yeah, they might have a slam dunk experience, you know?
Well, so let's talk about numbers, Randy, because I know basically, I know you well enough to know that you can take all of this down to sort of equations, numbers and radiances of numbers. And I heard you say in an interview that I watched, watched the other day, a video interview, and you were saying basically that prime numbers were like angels for star languages, and it was just fascinating. So I think we should jump into numbers.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, people are getting that, you know, all this 11, 11, 10, 10, 12, 12 stuff, you know, that's symptomatic of a numerical awareness, which is a form of harmonic awareness that people are having, even people who hate math. And a good portion of the people who talk like this do. They have math phobias. They don't like it. But they're becoming user-friendly, especially with master numbers like 11 through 99 and the triple numbers 111 through 999. And looking at digital clocks before, they didn't talk like that. But once we had digital clocks, you can look at 333 and 222, you know.
And don't they have specific meaning like 333? Doesn't that have a specific meaning?
All of those numbers have sacred meanings in the sacred texts. And it boils down to also the hidden numbers inside. So with the triple numbers, they're 111 is 3 times 37. Those are two prime numbers. 3 represents the Trinity, the minimum combination of 3 that holds structures in the universe. So that's part of the meaning of the Trinity. And then 37 represents God in the translation from Hebrew and Greek and so on, and also represents Elohim and creator gods, and it's also a function in hydrogen, but there's a science behind this. So 3 times 37, in other words, when those two numbers multiply, they become 111, and that's a famous cell rejuvenation frequency in terms of well-being and science and health and vibratory use of a frequency.
And you're saying that it's prime ones are God and foundation.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Okay. So all the triple numbers have 3 times 37 and then all the numbers 1 through 9 times that. And every one of those numbers has very special meanings in the ancient and sacred texts.
Well, I was talking to somebody the other day who is always waking up at 333 in the morning. And my understanding is that's a kind of a portal for his consciousness. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, certainly. Well, you know, you've got the triple of the Trinity going on. You add them up and it equals a 9 for completion. You multiply 3 times 3 times 3, and you get 27, which is a very important number in the hydrogen codes. That's why there's 27 blocks in the Great Pyramid King's Chamber on the north wall. There's 27 blocks on that wall. Mm-hmm. And the opposite wall, the south wall, has 37 blocks. And 37 divided by 27 is the physical constant of hydrogen that has to do with how light how matter behaves in the presence of light.
Hmm.
Even
wonderful.
The foundation of our country, 1776, that's 37 times 48, the 48 continental states. And then it has meanings like Lord of the Sabbath is one of the meanings of 1776.
Hmm.
River of life is another meaning. The Lamb in the midst of the throne is another meaning. I came forth from the Father. I mean, there's just a few examples of 1776 and being the sum numerical total of certain phrases from the Bible and other sacred texts in either Hebrew or Greek, as an example.
Well, is there a book, a reference book? Because this is a lot to remember in one interview if somebody's trying to break their own code.
Well, it's not. There's different books in the. There's Kabbalistic dictionaries that get into a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie Gaunt has got a good dozen books. Gaunt.
Mm-hmm.
Stonehenge and the Great Pyramid is one of her books that's full of that. She has a whole appendix in the back of overtone, whole number multiples of 37, and the gematria that goes with that. And I'm reading out of that now. So, like 3 times 37 on page 122 in that book. Is 111, and it means wonderful, or the Most High, Son of the Living God, Lord of all, a precious stone. Those are all different meanings translated into numbers. And see,
but do
the
they refer,
code,
if you keep responding to specific triple digits, is it referring to having access to new levels of consciousness, or where your consciousness is at, would you say that, or where your spiritual growth is?
These are time codes that are coded into numbers.
Time codes,
and these numbers run through the whole unified field, and they have sacred meanings.
Wonderful, yes.
Yeah. So somebody like, okay, so 333 means thy throne of God standing for is forever. And of God here is really relating to the Elohim. Or 3,330 would be Lord of Lords. That's another, of course, that has a zero after it. There's a lot of other meanings of 333. And so, remember Lazarus used to do 33 second processes.
That's right.
Okay, but... in The Only Planet of Choice by Schlemmer, they talk about a 33.3-second process. Not 33.333, not 33 and a third, but 33 and three-tenths.
Interesting.
All built around the triple number 33. And Abraham material talks about a 34 and multiples of 17. Okay, those are all in the same kind of window, but 33.3... fits one type of time code that's built on 3 and 37, and the other one is 33 represents 3 times 11, which is two different prime numbers, and all the double numbers have an 11 in them, and the 11 represents the basic two pillars of the human consciousness, the divine human standing with God. They said Ezekiel walked with God, not behind God. That's very intense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that raises his vibration. I'd say that's a pretty ascended statement.
I was going to say, Ezekiel's the guy who went way up there, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, then you have the two pillars of Boaz and Joachim.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the pillar Boaz is, the female pillar, and representing the black color, which is the color of the divine feminine void. And white is the color of the Joachim pillar. And there's a sacred number for each. 79 is for Boaz, and 729 is for Joachim.
Hmm.
And those are the sacred Kabbalistic numbers for those two pillars. Well, those two pillars represent a male and female energy, a basic energy in the universe, not positive and negative, but male and female, magnetic and electric, that's balanced. And when those pillars are balanced, there's an energy field in between the two, which you can work with, that energy field. So a lot of the temples have pillars, and you have to pass through the pillars. And some of them, even in an open temple, if they put the force fields up, you can't even walk through the pillars.
And
yet there's no door.
If you do, it's to help you ascend, or to move your frequencies, or to spin all the cellular electricity. Is that it?
Well, it might be. There's different agendas.
So some
different,
could be
depending on why something is set up, what the temple is for, why that person is there, and why they are, if they have been invited into the temple, you know, what the rapport, what is the code that's being played out, scene. with that soul.
So you're saying this can empower us, or this, it's like the old spin duality. It can empower or it can keep people back?
Well, either way, because if you're not prepared, you don't, they don't want you to take your garbage into the temple.
Right.
You can't go through the eye of the needle. So the temple is trying to keep that noise out of the field, because if you bring that noise into the field, you could end up manifesting your fears right in front of you. And so to protect the person, they do this with the Great Pyramid. They do certain things to detune the pyramid before they let the public go in there. Hmm. Because there are certain places in the pyramid that they don't want public wandering around with all their aberrant thoughts, because they could really make a mess.
Oh, well, tell us about the pyramids, because I know you've gone to Egypt a number of times, and you're pretty much, you're very conscious and a real teacher about the way the pyramid energy goes, aren't you, and the colors and the sounds?
Yeah, it seems to be a big part of my code and blueprint. Mm-hmm. Although, out of the three trips that I've co-led there, the first time I went there, I got sick the night before and didn't even get to go into the pyramid. It was just down the street. I spent all these years studying all this stuff, all these tuning forks all tuned to the pyramid. Okay, I finally get to go into the pyramid. And I get sick the night before and don't, on the whole trip, don't even get to go into the pyramid.
Wow, why do you think that happened, Randy? Was your code not ready yet? Or you?
Yeah, and there could have been energies that were being detrimental to me.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be, and people did go in that day, mm-hmm. but not for me. Mm-hmm. The next time I went in, I laid in the sarcophagus chanting, and the electrical power went off in the pyramid, and the ceiling had formed this electric blue light on the ceiling,
oh,
and
my.
I was sitting there doing like Buddhist chants, just tones, not phonetic sounds, and no language, just that kind of low stuff,
mm-hmm.
and grooving, and the whole room, like I got into the vibe with the room, and got into the zone, and then this other phenomena happened. So the
when you said you got into the vibe with the room, does that mean that you were in resonance with the way the energy was moving in the pyramid?
Yeah, yeah. I got into the resonance of the inside the sarcophagus itself,
mm-hmm.
and then the sarcophagus resonance resonates with the room, and there's a ratio. It's a ratio of 16/15 hmm. between the two. And if you subtract the resonance of the room, if you subtract the resonance of the sarcophagus from the resonance of the room, it creates the Schumann resonance.
Mm.
So if you get them both going, there's a hum in that room that puts you in touch with the earth.
Wonderful.
Now that's important, because if you're going to have an ascension experience and you've gone through all the initiations necessary to have overcome your fear of death and a bunch of things, you also want to be able to ground and come back here. And make your way back here and not get stuck in the wall and in some kind of ascension experience where you don't make it all the way through. So you need to be able to go, make it all the way through, and come back safely. And when you come back, to integrate the experience so you can walk around in the world and not, as Jesus did, and not have somebody be able to come up and touch you because you're still in a rarefied form. So after that experience, you go into the Queen's Chamber, and you need to integrate being a higher ascended light being so that you can go back in the world, walk around, and have a beneficial effect and not burn everybody's circuits out.
Did you do that? Did you lie in the sarcophagus and chant the chant, have the blue light, and then what did you do after that?
Then we invited all the rest of the people from our tour, another 31 or so, 32 people, into the room, and then for several hours we did ceremonies with chanting and crystal bowls and singing and sacred chants and crystals, and we had hours by ourselves in the room working with sound and such.
Wow, was it amazing?
Yeah, it was fun.
And then did you go to the Queen's Chamber?
I didn't just get to kick back there and, bask in whatever had happened. I had to,
teach.
Go into service and conduct things and so on, but certainly my consciousness was way tuned. I was so tuned to that room and the whole deal that just speaking in there, I was in that vibe. And people could hear sounds before they came up into that room. They didn't know where the sounds were. And the chanting that I was doing was resonating around in the pyramid.
Wow. I heard the acoustics are outrageous there. Of course, the whole thing is a resonant chamber, isn't it?
Every one of the rooms all resonate different ways. See, the ancient building code was form follows sound. The modern version, and why we have all these sick buildings in the world from different architects, is form follows function. Mm-hmm. But in the ancient world, they knew that sound was the basis of the creation of reality. Hmm. And so architecture had to reflect the knowledge of harmonics. Well, and if you didn't do that, you built a room that was out of tune.
Wow. So
really,
is your house in tune, or have you had to create the tuning of your own house? I mean, do people tune
houses? I had to create
houses?
It and work with it. You know, it was in a nice location, and there were certain things about it, but I had to bring things in and hang geometries and put crystals certain places and put tuning forks on the walls and tune the walls. And I mean, burned in different kinds of fragrances, did ceremonies, used different kinds of lights and lighting in different rooms to do different things with, colored lights, had gongs.
Wow, wonderful.
Well,
I know it's amazing just to go into your house. Let's go back to the pyramids just for a minute. When you go into an experience like that, and I say into meaning way inside as well, can you replicate that? Can you go back into that space by choice, by consciousness?
Well, that was part of my goal, is to merge with the hologram so much mm-hmm. that just talking to you right now, everything about that is available through the sound in my voice.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because you're asking.
Yeah, I'm getting quite a bit of a buzz from your consciousness and from your resonance.
But the receptivity in the listener will determine what they will or won't get from it. So if they don't have the receptivity, it won't happen. Doesn't mean it wasn't available to happen, but they need to have the receptivity and the code that says this is okay to receive this and for this to be woken in me. It might not be somebody's code and their timing. And in their timing cycle for that to awaken yet, because maybe something in their foundation needs to get handled first. The universe works on in what's called an event clock.
Mm.
So, that's why 12/21, there's an auspiciousness, because certain events have to happen, not just because it's 12/21. If a certain sequence of events happen, then each event that happens allows the next event in the sequence to do whatever fully it can do. If it doesn't, or it gets thwarted, or something happens and throws off that, then that sequence is disturbed, and then there's alternate and backup plans and other things that happen. So a lot of times when predictions are made, at that moment, that's how the momentum is. But if a certain event doesn't happen, then it might not set the stage properly for the coming event. And so the event clock part is really crucial. There's a basic window, but within that basic window is the effects on human consciousness, the kind of prayer work that people are doing all over the world, and how that affects the weather and affects the atmosphere and all of that stuff.
Positively,
going on.
Right? The prayers do. Hmm?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of the prayers get canceled because of the way people pray that really don't know how to pray in a more scientific way of praying, to where when they do the prayer, they trust enough and it's a done deal and the prayer is on its way to being delivered. A lot of people pray, but they have to keep repeating it because they don't really know if it's going to be answered. And they question it so much that they basically cancel the certainty of knowing that the Creator heard them and is delivering. But the delivery schedule has particular event clocks and things to pay attention to. And if it doesn't get delivered tomorrow, you'll be thankful that it isn't, because there's something you don't know. But maybe in 10 days or 10 years it'll get delivered, because that's the right timing. And you'll be glad when the
time... Because you could be saying that it's your codes aren't ready. You're not activated, right?
Yeah, it's not awake. It's, you know, it could be painful for some people to have a certain slam dunk experience.
Mm-hmm. So, there's so much...
You could
much...
be struck by lightning and wake up because of all the massive phosphorus releases from the spine, or it could be struck by lightning and zapped and killed.
Right.
And a lot of people who are struck by lightning typically get struck one and two more times. A lot of people have been struck like three times, the same person.
Like Daniel Brinkley. Daniel.
Right.
Yes.
That's kind of interesting.
It is very interesting. So that's something to do with their codes and their magnetic forces. Is that it?
Yeah. And maybe there's a certain kind of resonance of some kind going on in them, And
that's why we shouldn't judge each other. Well, now we have to end shortly, but I'm going to go a little bit over time. I want you to talk to people a bit about the Om. We know that you're a musician and we haven't got very far into that. So you have to meet with us again if you don't mind.
You talk about the Om?
Yeah, because I heard you talking about it and it was fascinating. And now thinking about, for example, if Om is the beginning of all manifestation and life and so on, it depends on our codes about how we can use it or receive it. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, there's OM and then there's AUM, and then there's different pronunciations that produce different overtones and undertones out of the vowel sounds. And what you do with the M at the end, OM, and the, you know, that sustains it. And then there's OHM that you get in electrical engineering that also relates. And so there's, you know, there's different kind of an OM. There's not one frequency as a fundamental that is truly representing that OM, because it's omnisonic, includes everything.
It's almost unfathomable. So it's like the nature of manifestation would have to do with how you use the OM.
Right, and where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I saw a film of somebody pronouncing the Om through this tonoscope, and there was a metal plate with sand on it, and it vibrated the plate, and it formed the Shirancha with the 9 interlocking triangles, 4 pointing one way and 5 pointing the opposite way, and I watched
Wonderful.
This take place. But that doesn't mean that anybody going up to that machine and saying or singing, chanting the Om is going to produce that geometric pattern.
Uh-huh. And because it has to do with who's doing it and what their codes are and what
right.
their intentions are.
Right, and so the harmonic, where that person is coming from, they're like their fingerprint, but this is a voice print, will have harmonic codes in it of certain overtones and certain undertones in the pronunciation, and there's a deeper holographic reality that's not obvious just saying Om.
Gee, that's really wonderful. It's giving me a lot of food for thought. But we have to say goodbye, so I'd like you to tell people how to get hold of you.
Well, telepathically is the easiest, but short of that, you know.
Isn't that the cell phone, the cell from the brain?
I have my 831-662-2594 is the best phone number, 831-662-2594. Email is universalsong, S-O-N-G, universalsong@yahoo.com. And those would be the, you know, two easy ways to do that.
And people should check your website because it's very informative. And we've only done a thumbnail of the number of things you're involved in. So we would like you to come back and take us further through your website. It's universalsong.net.
Yeah, thank you.
And Randy, it's just been a delight to talk to you. And as usual, I'm left with a million questions. And I have to say this about you, ever since I've known you, which has been a number of years now, you are an activator. You get things going inside of me. I can feel it as you talk. So thank you for that.
So if that's quickened your cells, maybe we were ascending while we were talking here.
You betcha. Boy, am I ever
high. I mean, I'm still sitting down. I did this interview sitting down.
Oh, you did?
You know?
Oh, I'm levitating. I'm 4 inches off my chair.
Awesome. Well, someday we'll do this on Skype and people will see you floating there.
That's right. So thank you so much for listening, everyone. I hope you're feeling activated as well. And we'll have Randy back soon. We have a lot of questions to ask him. So
thanks
many,
a million.
And thank you. And many
and blessings to everybody
everyone.
Listening. And may you be benefited from listening to this.
You bet.